Good morning, Damien O'Reilly with you between now and 12 o'clock on today's programme. Restrictions on movement and lockdown sent to be extended. We get expert analysis on what may be announced later this afternoon. An Easter like no other for the Catholic Church. We'll be talking to a priest and author, Father Michael Collins. Have you made your will? Our regular expert, barrister Tim Bracken, will take your queries on wills and probates in these restrictive times. Children at risk, how are they coping and what help is out there for children suffering problems during the lockdown? Brian O'Connell tries to keep fit at home. Oliver Callan has a lighter take on the week's news stories. And it's Friday, which means the Friday gathering, where we will be discussing, among other things, last night's half a trillion euro EU COVID-19 fund. These stories and more over a busy 2 hours this Good Friday. You can email today, sor@rte.ie. Text 51551 and the tweet is at todaysor. Now, it seems inevitable that the restrictions on movement that were announced by the Taoiseach 2 weeks ago will once again be extended later today. The question is, though, for how long and what type of restrictions can we expect? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Carmen Regan, consultant in maternal medicine and senior lecturer at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, based at the Coombe. Dr. Emily O'Connor, who is consultant in emergency medicine and president of the Association of Emergency Medicine. And also by Professor Kingston Mills, professor of experimental immunology at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning to you all. Thanks for joining us this Good Friday morning. Dr. Carmen Regan, to you first. You've always been calling from the very start, I suppose, for stricter restrictions to be put in place. What are you expecting from the announcement later today?
Well, I hope, Damien, that they continue to restrict as they have done. We are only beginning to see how we are succeeding in suppressing this epidemic, and we are doing really well. And I think that's really important to send that message out to everyone, because what has been working is the social distancing. And what's really important to people like myself, who are aware of what's happening on the front line, is that we are seeing this condition seep into our healthcare service, and it is alarming. Now, having said that, I'm very heartened by the figures from last night's news that the R0, or the transmission rate, is decreasing, and that means it's working. What we can't assume is that we can ease up on the restrictions in the near term. And that's really important. I think people need to understand that. This is not something that we're imposing upon people for any other reason except for the health of the nation. And people are doing really well. And it's really important that they understand that it's not forever, but that it does need to continue. And I do think the restrictions will be continued for a couple of weeks, if not months.
Mm. In relation to maybe adding to the restrictions, there are some people listening to us, and we see posts online as well from individuals saying, why are the airports and the ports still open? Now, there are people arriving back into this country for various reasons, maybe some of them coming to work in the healthcare service, people returning maybe for funerals, and of course, holidaymakers who've been stranded abroad. We can't, I suppose, really tell them you're not welcome. So that's probably the reason why, and of course, the transport of goods to us as an island nation. Having said all that, in relation to ports and exports, or ports and airports, and the fact that we are an island nation, what can be done there to try and reduce the risk of the disease coming in from abroad?
Well, I think with regard to travel, it's not an all or nothing situation. Like, nobody is suggesting that important imports or exports are restricted. But we have never really imposed any strict measures on non-essential travel, as other countries such as New Zealand have done, and they're showing very good results with that particular policy. We should be imposing quarantine on anybody coming into the country who is not essential and are for recreative purposes. And that should be done by tracking, by calling in, by stringent public health policies. There's no doubt, because even one, we saw this at the beginning of March, you know, one case, three cases, 10 cases, the exponential curve. We have to be vigilant on all fronts. There's no point in fighting fires on one front. So I do believe that. I've always believed that. And I think we are slightly, I suppose, in terms of Northern Ireland, we need to have an all-Ireland approach, I would think. That's very important. We're very fortunate that we're an island. because we can restrict a little bit more stringently.
Okay, I'll bring Professor Kingston Mills in at this point. Good morning to you, Kingston. Again, just on that point of the measures that have been put in place, Dr. Carmen Regan saying there, we are doing well, but this must continue for it to be ultimately successful. What's your own opinion on what will be announced later today, and should there be any add-ons?
Okay, so first of all, let me just agree with Carmen on the airline flights. I mean, of course, commercial traffic has to continue to bring in medicines and goods, and as much as possible, a business that require air traffic should continue. But there's absolutely no reason for, other than repatriation of people that have been stranded abroad. And by now, I think a lot of those should be already in.
So are you saying, but are you saying then, at other airports around Europe or around the world, that people returning to Ireland, how would that be administered? That they are asked, why are you going there? How would airlines?
I don't know the logistics of it, yeah. But I do know that for the last number of weeks, I've been looking on the Dublin Airport website and seeing substantial numbers of passenger flights toing and froing from Europe. And
okay,
Britain.
But as you said, how do you logistically police that then?
I mean, I think the government have to talk to the airlines perhaps and say, do you need to have these flights or put in place the restrictions that Carmen mentioned in relation to New Zealand? So I think stricter measures here. But I think if I could come to the sort of bigger picture, really, because that's one element of it, and it's an element that that caused a lot of problems early in the pandemic. We allowed flights still to come from northern Italy and from other areas, which brought in a lot of the early cases. Now we have community spread of the virus, and that's the big issue. There are two ways of dealing with this. One, you either keep people indoors and stop them from coming in contact with each other, and that can be effective. Mm-hmm. The other way, which China and Korea did very effectively, is contact tracing and testing of everybody who was in contact with someone's infected. We're not doing that here. This would completely overpower the testing.
You're saying we're not doing contact tracing?
We're not doing it to the extent that it was done in China or Korea. No, we're not. The capacity is not there to do it. So, if we weren't doing it. So, if somebody is infected in the community, everybody who's in contact with them is not being tested. So that needs to be done if you want to have an alternative
lockdown. But can you do that while at the same time, with the shortage in testing kits, at the same time in prioritising tests to those that need the most, for example, people in the health...
That's exactly the problem, but that's what's happening. I mean, what the test kits are being used for is to prioritise quite correctly the health service staff and confirming diagnosis of those that actually have the infection. But the problem is that the diagnosis is happening sometimes 2 weeks after the person has showed up with symptoms and they've already recovered by the time that the test results come out. So there's an alternative adjunct to this PCR test, as it's called. So the test now that's used is to detect the virus by amplifying the nucleic acid in the laboratory. It's very laborious. There are issues with supply of reagents. There are issues around the need for containment facilities to extract the nucleic acid from the sample. So it is very technically demanding, and that's why you can't do tens of thousands of these assays in a week or a day.
The government might say, and experts in the health sector might say, that any shortcomings in relation to trying to tackle the problem here, it's out of their control. In other words, that when it comes to obviously personal PPEs and when it comes to the agent that's needed for testing and so on and so forth, that these are issues that are outside the control of the government and the HSE. Or are you saying, no, we could actually be doing more, we could be upskilling more people, we could be doing more tests?
Okay, what I was going to say there, and I'll say it now, was that there is an adjunct to this PCR test, and that is an antibody test. So what an antibody test is, it measures the immune response of the individual when they're either at the peak of the infection or they've recovered. And the huge benefit of this type of assay, it's much, much simpler, and it can be done in a much higher throughput scale than the PCR test. So this is something that the other countries are looking at now. Ireland is also looking at it, but haven't yet implemented it. The problem is that there there are a lot of companies selling these kits. These kits haven't been validated, and we don't know for sure that they work. One of the initiatives we in the universities are doing are to, and I'm heading a project in Trinity on research in relation to COVID-19. One of the things we're doing is to develop a much more sensitive testing system that will be focused on antibody. Now, this is not going to replace in any way. Let's confuse it. It's not going to replace the current PCR test. It's an adjunct to it, mainly to identify those that have been infected and recovered. Studies in other countries have shown that, there's a study in Germany that's shown that up to 15% of people in one study have already been infected and recovered. Those people are effectively safe to return to work. So if we can identify those people and test them and show that they've had developed antibodies, then we can, with a certain degree of confidence, say that they're likely to be protected against reinfection and therefore safe to return to work.
And,
so this is a huge new addition to the potential arsenal that's coming down the line.
And what came out from the briefing yesterday evening is that we are working off the assumption that while we have 6,000 cases here, we probably do have another 6,000 that have been undetected yet, or where people have...
Vastly more than 6,000.
You would think so, okay.
Vastly more than that. I mean, if the estimates from Germany and other countries are correct, you're talking between 5 and 15% of the entire population. Not 6,000, but tens, hundreds of thousands potentially infected and recovered.
Okay.
Remember that some patients, and again, studies in other countries have shown this, some individuals that get infected never have any symptoms at all, and yet those people can transmit. So the big issue with those is that if you don't do contact tracing of people who are in contact with people who've been infected, they can then pass off on the virus to somebody else.
Okay, I want to bring Emily O'Connor in here. Emily, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I know you were teleconferencing with your colleagues around the country yesterday. What have they been saying to you? What is your own analysis at this point of the situation in relation to the number of cases that have been encountered, the potential for more cases, and how we're actually dealing with the situation?
So every emergency department around the country has spent the last couple of weeks setting up different streams for patients coming into hospital, those that we suspect have COVID and those that are attending with non-COVID related symptoms, and different methods of staffing and equipment have been set up in all those areas to try and keep those two groups of patients and staff apart. Attendances for both groups are increasing again. I know it was well publicised that numbers had dropped off, numbers of ED attendances had dropped off, but they are beginning to climb again now. What I do want to say to people is with a lot of people being at home, there are activities being done that are putting people at higher risk of needing to go to hospital and needing an ICU bed. That's nothing to do with COVID. And that is things like climbing ladders, doing guttering, falling off, serious head injuries.
So keep yourself safe.
High-speed travel. So try and keep yourself safe, because what we are all trying to do is the community, emergency departments, we're trying to filter through the patients that are going to need the ICU beds, the ventilators, the renal replacement. So we're trying to keep that number as small as possible. And I've used a funnel analogy before. If too many in the community get infected, then the proportion of the always know that a proportion of those that get infected are going to end up needing critical care.
Okay.
So the less that get infected in the community, the less that are going to need the intensive care beds.
And we're not at full capacity yet in terms of ICU beds, are we?
Some ICUs around the country have been coming under pressure, but there's a lot of work being done expanding out their capacity beyond their traditional ICUs, opening up ventilators in other areas around the hospitals. So you are right, there is capacity still in the system. Some inter-hospital transfers are occurring now as well. So if one hospital doesn't have ICU capacity, they're transferring out to another hospital that does have capacity.
Okay, I'm going to ask you all where you think we're going to go in terms of crystal ball gazing. And I know that's a dangerous area to get involved in all of this. But just, Emily, when we sit down every evening at 5:45, those of us that do, to look at Tony O'Houlihan, give details of the latest figures and all of that, there are more trends, there are more percentages, more numbers to be crunched there, and we're being presented with all of that data every evening now. Some of it might seem contradictory, but in terms from your perspective in the medical profession that you're in, What is the one trend or the one figure that you look for that is most important? And in doing so, what are you actually seeing? Are you optimistic by what you're seeing, or is it still too early?
It's still too early, but what we're looking is a stretching out, a flattening of this curve, so that when people get sick, they get sick at a rate that we can look after them. What we always look at in emergency departments is the number of patients ventilated every day, so that we know that the proportion of patients we see, those that get very sick, that we can move them onto ICU. So we're always interested in whether there's critical care capacity left or not.
Okay, and just very briefly, Carmen Regan, back to you. When do you see restrictions being eased? How many more weeks do you think the government, the Taoiseach, needs to announce of this current scenario when he speaks later on today?
Well, I suppose the answer to that depends on the public response. I think it's really important to say that. So the more stringent we are, the harder we work at it, the shorter this period will be. And I look at the death rates. That's what I look at, because we don't know what the prevalence in the population is. And it is true to say that it's probably much higher than we're seeing. And what's really important to understand is there's a huge amount of asymptomatic transmission. Nobody is safe. We all get it. We can all get it. We can all give it to people. So I think if we look at an optimistic, I suppose, view, I would say end of May. That would be my view. I think we need time. This is really important time. We need time to catch up with the testing, with the PCR, with the antibody testing, with whatever, with suppression. We need that time to prevent the surge that we're talking about in the intensive care units. And people need to buy into that. There's no point in giving up on this. We absolutely have to take the medicine now.
Okay.
So I don't know, but I would say end of May.
Kingston Mills, briefly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with those comments. I think it very much depends on two things. One, the public's response to the measures, and two, the healthcare system's ability to cope with not only the patients, but that also the testing and getting and ramping that up. That's critical. So if we can test for the contacts in the community, the need for the lockdown is not as stringent then. I think in terms of when are we going
yes.
to be over the whole thing, that's a bigger question. I mean, it's very hard
okay.
to predict that, but mid-June, I would say, would be
right.
a more optimistic prediction.
Okay, the Professor of Public Health in UCC, Ivan Perry, has texted us to say, we are contact tracing to a high level in Ireland, both in occupational settings and the community. We're going to leave it there. Kingston Mills, Emily O'Connor and Dr. Carmen Regan, thank you all for joining us.